This episode is brought to you by Sterling Soap Company. Fellas, you've heard the phrase, look good, feel good, right? But why not add smell good to that too? That's where Sterling Soap Company comes in. First, Sterling Soap is 100% natural and has a wide variety of bath soaps, shave soaps, beard balm, lotions, and cologne. Second, there's a scent just for you. How about burgundy? Yeah, it's more than a color. The Sterling Soap folks blend natural essential oils with hints of mahogany, golden amber, and sandalwood. Or how about D503, an intensely masculine scent inspired by Legend by Mont Blanc. And third, you will feel good about the price. For just a little more than you'd pay at the grocery store, Sterling Soap will leave you feeling clean, refreshed, and ready for whatever's next. Give Sterling Soap a try today. Visit sterlingsoap.com. This day in sports history. It's May 14th, and on this day in 1967, one of the men who helped integrate college athletics in Kentucky died tragically in a car accident, just a few days before he was to join the Los Angeles Lakers. 4 years earlier, Dwight Smith became the first black athlete to sign at Western Kentucky University to play basketball. Clem Haskins was a close second, and they both enrolled at the university in 1963. During their time there, they won two Ohio Valley Conference titles, and in 1966, the Hilltoppers were one of 22 teams to compete in the NCAA basketball tournament. If it had not been for a controversial foul call on Smith late in their tournament game with Michigan, the Hilltoppers would have played their state rival Kentucky Wildcats in the next round. Smith had been all OVC for 3 seasons in an era when freshmen were not allowed to play. He averaged a double-double of 15 points, 11 rebounds a game. At the end of his collegiate career, many saw Smith as one of the next superstars in the NBA. He was a great shooter from range, was the top rebounding guard in the country as a collegian. He played tenacious defense, and his dribbling skills were nearly unmatched except by, perhaps, Bob Cousy. The Harlem Globetrotters liked him so much, they offered him a contract. On May 3rd, the Los Angeles Lakers selected him in the third round of that year's NBA draft with the 23rd overall pick. And Smith was excited about the prospect of playing with the likes of Elgin Baylor, Jerry West, Gail Goodrich. But he would never get that opportunity. Instead, on this day, Mother's Day, 1967, less than 2 weeks after being drafted by the Lakers, and just a few days shy of finishing up classes at WKU, Smith was driving with his sister Kay and his brother Greg as passengers. They had spent the weekend with their family, and specifically to be home for Mother's Day. It was raining on their drive back to Bowling Green. Visibility was low, and Dwight did not see the ponding of water on the road. His car hydroplaned, veered sharply to the right, and flipped over in a rain-swollen ditch. Motorists following behind quickly pulled over and attempted to roll the car over or help anybody inside. Greg was able to scramble out a rear door, but Dwight and Kay drowned inside the car, submerged upside down. Now, whenever a tragedy like this happens, we always want to ask the question, you know, what could have been? There were many who say that greatness was on the horizon. He could have been spoken in the same breath with some of the NBA greats, or even alongside other guys selected in that 1967 draft, like Pat Riley and Phil Jackson, Earl the Pearl Monroe, and Walt Frazier. Or perhaps his numbers would have been more pedestrian, like those chosen around him, such as Gary Greger or Bill Turner. But he was never given the chance, and we were not given the opportunity to witness it. Dwight Smith was 21. Also on this day, in 1992, former NFL great Lyle Alzado died after a battle with brain cancer. And I'm sorry to be Donnie Downer here with stories about people dying, but there is some significance here that I think is important to mention. So, Alzado was a classic overachiever, if it hadn't been for a car accident that injured Denver Broncos scout Stan Jones and thus kept him in South Dakota to do some scouting, Alzado may never have been discovered and drafted out of South Dakota's Yankton College. The Broncos took him in the fourth round of the 1971 NFL draft as a defensive lineman. He made his mark pretty quickly, racking up 10.5 sacks the second year in the league. He was a two-time All-Pro, and he went on to play for the Browns and the Raiders before retiring in 1985. But Alzado had been hiding a secret from everybody around him and everybody in the league. Despite denying the accusations of steroid use and abuse, Alzado said he had been using steroids. In a Sports Illustrated article that he wrote, he said, "I started taking anabolic steroids in 1969, and I never stopped. Not when I retired from the NFL in 1985. Not ever. I couldn't. And then I made things worse by using human growth hormone, too. I had my mindset, and I did what I wanted to do." Alzado had been diagnosed with T-cell central nervous system lymphoma, and he claimed that his extensive use of steroids was the cause of his cancer. And while steroids can have negative effects on the human body, and there are a few who agree with Alzado's claim, most doctors say that Alzado's steroid use did not cause his brain tumor. Alzado was 43 when he died. Okay, so I hear you saying, did anything happen on this day in history that did not involve somebody dying? Yeah, how about this? In 1970, Boston Bruins head coach Harry Sinden retired from coaching just a few days after the Bees had lifted the Stanley Cup over their heads. Haha, I can hear you saying, well, he must have been old and in the league for a long time. Nope. Sinden was only 37 and had been coach of the Bruins and a coach in the NHL for just four seasons. When he took over in Boston in 1967, he was the youngest coach, coaching the youngest team in the NHL. When they won the Cup in 1970, it was the first Cup the Bruins had won in 29 years. They had a great nucleus of Bobby Orr, Phil Esposito. The cupboard was full, and they were in a great spot to keep it going. So, what happened with Sinden? Well, apparently he was not a big fan of the Bruins' front office. With the success that Boston was having, he went to the execs earlier in the year, and he asked for a raise after the season was done. And they said no. And when Sinden left the team, the Bruins put him on the voluntary retired list, which effectively barred him from coaching with any other team in the NHL for a year. So, Sinden went to work for a construction company in New York. In 1972, he gave up the construction business to return to hockey as the coach of the Canadian team in the Summit Series against the Soviets, which the Canadians won. He returned to Boston as the general manager shortly after, and he spent the next 28 seasons as GM. In 1972, Willie Mays made his debut as a New York Met. His time in New York was not long, but at least he enjoyed this day against the team he spent most of his career with and then traded him away. The Giants were in town, and Mays took a 3-2 pitch over the left field fence for a solo shot in the fifth inning that proved to be the game winner against his old club. At this point in his career, Mays was 41 years old and playing first base instead of outfield. He would play 69 games for the Mets in 1972 before retiring at the end of the year. Also on this day in 1967, Mickey Mantle hit career home run number 500 when he took junk ball pitcher Stu Miller's seventh-inning slow ball over the right field wall and into the bleachers of Yankee Stadium. It, too, was the winning run in a 6-5 win over Baltimore. The Yankee fans were so appreciative of Mantle's homer that they cheered loudly for the next 15 minutes, so much so that Mantle, also playing first base here late in his career, was so distracted by the show of affection that he made two errors on the same play that nearly cost them the win. Mantle's 500th put him in rarefied air for the time, joining Ruth Mays, Jimmy Fox, Ted Williams, and Mel Ott as the only other major leaguers to hit 500 or more home runs. Mantle would play another year after this one and finish with 536 career homers. Which leads us to what happened today in 1986. Reggie Jackson hit career home run number 537, passing Mantle on the all-time list. Jackson would end up with 563 for his career, which is good for 14th on the current list of home run hitters. And let's break up the baseball home run love fest and end on this note. In 2016, Zlatan Ibrahimovic scored two goals for PSG in the final game of the season. His brace of goals gave him 38 for the year, which was the greatest single-season mark for any PSG player and is second only to Josip Skloba's 44 that he scored in 1971 in France's Ligue 1. Time now for today's non-sports Did You Know? Before you kill that spider, know this. Globally, spiders eat as much as 800 million tons of insects in a given year. So, just relocate that web spinner instead of squashing it. That's all for today. I'll have more tomorrow on This Day in Sports History. This has been an original Thrive Suite production.
Hey there, sports history fans.
We've got some exciting news to share with you. Six of our podcasts from the Sports History Network have made it to the final round of voting for the prestigious Sports Podcast Awards. Here are their shows and the categories. Historically Speaking Sports and This Day in Sports History are both competing for Best Sports Talk Podcast. No Nonsense Old School Weightlifting History is in the running for Best Fitness, Health, and Well-Being Podcast. When Football Was Football is up for Best Sports Documentary Podcast. Wrestling with Heels On has entered the ring for Best Wrestling Podcast. And Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing is fighting for the title for Best Combat Sports Podcast. Now, of course, we need your help to take home the championship for each of these awesome shows. All you gotta do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/vote, cast your vote for your favorite shows, or better yet, all six of them. Again, every vote counts, and we gotta show the world how much sports history really matters. So thank you for your support and making Sports History Network the headquarters for sports yesteryear. But again, don't wait. You got to go vote now. That's over at sportshistorynetwork.com/vote.